at the request of the great Jason Gage, we have changed our opening music. This is Sox Talk on the air right here at SoxTalk.com. What is up, Jason?
What's up? As you can see, I got my voice back, and I'm ready to make up for that last show where I could barely talk.
Yes, and I am Mario Scalise. I forgot to say my name in case you didn't know. Welcome to the show. This is our, 10th or 11th show?
I think it's the 11th.
So we've been very consistent outside of perhaps 1 week. So very good so far.
Yeah, and it is yet another week. The Chicago White Sox are in first place, half a game above the Detroit Tigers.
But it didn't happen because of their play, necessarily. They only won, two games? They had won two games only, so they went 2-3.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's pathetic?
You know what's pathetic? When you were asking how many wins they just had, I raised my finger to 2 as if you would see that, all the way over in Chicago. And then it hit me that you wouldn't.
Wait a minute.
But despite that poor week, we do still have the best record in baseball. 24-12, although the Detroit Tigers are only half a game behind us at 24-13. And the St. Louis Cardinals have also won 24 games, and they're 24-14. But enough about all the other teams. We're here to talk about the White Sox. And it was a pretty poor week. And the week started off with our show, where we kind of scooped people. We gave you guys a little inside information about Jose Contreras having some back problems.
Not many people have probably found that out elsewhere, which is unfortunate. But for those
they could have found it out on SoxTalk.com, where we broke the news before any media source.
Well, either way, hopefully they heard it first here or through SoxTalk.com. Either way, it broke the story. Jose Contreras on the disabled list with a back problem.
Yeah, sciatic nerve, which is apparently it's something in your back that causes your hip to hurt. My dad had it a while ago, and he was a gimp for about a month. It was the funniest month of my life because I was making fun of him the whole time. But yeah, I know what I mean.
Yeah, and it's never good to break news like that because you don't want anybody to land on a disabled list, especially with the back injury. But in Contreras' case, it seemed like more of a precautionary move, and he seems to be ready to return soon and at full strength.
Yep, he threw off the mound pain-free, so he made his recent side session, and the White Sox have said that he will pitch Sunday against the Cubs, and that's the second day after he comes off the disabled list because he would be eligible to pitch as soon as Saturday.
Kind of a quick recovery. I mean, I guess he actually may have been able to make his last start, but they more or less just as a precautionary measure, because I know what they were saying, it's a long season, there's no reason to take any chances, especially when you have a solid rotation like the Sox have, although they haven't been too solid. But they had Charles Hager come in. He came in, took his place. It was kind of a surprise to some people because some people were thinking that McCarthy should have been given a chance because that was kind of the whole reason to have him on the team, is serve as the long reliever / six starter, spot starter. They brought up Charles Hager instead. Did you get a chance to see him at all?
I watched part of the game. Part of the game I was in school. But Hager pitched bad. I think that's as expected. And Don Cooper said it best. You can't judge a guy after his first start. You just can't.
But he.
So many Hall of Famers had bad first starts. You know, it happens. He walked about a half dozen guys in 4 innings of work. And the Angels didn't hit him hard. I saw him get Vladdy out a couple times. But he was just all over the place with his command. You could tell he was nervous. And I'm not too concerned. I'm not one that thinks he's going to be our fifth starter ever. Because I happen to think we're not going to ever use a knuckleball pitcher. Because there's too many things knuckleballers are dependent on. And aside from all that, Ozzie is a guy that preaches defense. And when you have a knuckleball out there, you can't really play defense. Because you have tons of pass balls, regardless of how good your catcher is. You could have Pudge Rodriguez, and I'm talking about Carlton Fisk, not Pudge Rodriguez. And you'd still have tons of pass balls behind you with a knuckleballer on the mound. And anytime a guy's on first base, they can steal. And hell, with most of our starters out there, they can steal on us all day long because A.J. Pierzynski doesn't really throw guys out. So you're asking for a lot of things if this team actually thinks Hager's going to be a fifth starter a year or two from now. That said, he will be a fifth starter somewhere else.
And I would agree. I think I think whenever you're dealing with the knuckleball, and Cooper said it, you have to be very patient. You know, he's only 24, 25?
I don't think he's that old.
He might be even younger. I mean, so you're talking about a really young guy, and a knuckleball is a tough pitch to control. He's probably still got a long ways to really figure it out at the major league level because he's going to be walking some guys. So, you know, overall, I wasn't that upset with him. I think, you know, he kept a couple balls high, but it really it was to be expected, I think.
Hager is 22 years old.
Yeah, so he's got a ways to go. I think when once again, knuckleballs, it's such a tough pitch to throw. You can't expect a 22-year-old to just come up at the major league level and perfect it. You know, he's going to have a good start here and there, but for the most part, he's going to have his struggles. But, you know, if you watch that game, the first inning, the Angels, I think they took only two or three swings that entire first inning. I believe their first two batters in Figgins and Cabrera, they didn't swing a one pitch. They didn't even looked like they were making an effort to even swing. They weren't going to take a check swing, nothing. They were just standing there and watching him. So give the Angels credit for being patient with the young knuckleballer, just waiting for him to throw a strike, trying to, you know, make him prove to them that he's going to get over the plate.
Well, that's the thing. You don't ever hear your patience in the word Anaheim Angels or Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim go together because the Angels are about as bad of an offensive team as there is in baseball, and they don't have a clue how to draw walks. So I was shocked. So it's a really bad sign when you're Charles Hager and you walk that many guys against a team that's as futile as the Angels. Yeah. But at the same time, first start, butterflies, you really can't grade anything on this. You can't really evaluate anything. I did see he has a pretty good knuckleball. And I could see him taking over for Tim Wakefield as the next knuckleballer for the next 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
But after Hager got shellacked in his start, the White Sox sent him down, and they called up a right-handed reliever, and they needed to have a reliever because McCarthy is going to be making the start on Monday. Which
Augustine,
will be today.
What's it, Montero. Montero.
And this guy's a bum, plain and simple. He pitched great this year in Charlotte. He's never been good his entire minor league career, but apparently he has a very good arm, arm.
He's got a live arm. He can't control it, though, and that's kind of the problem because it seems like he's going to be the type of guy who's either going to be way off the plate or he's going to lay pitches right down the middle for guys. But he does have a live arm, and I think whenever you have a live arm, you have somewhat of a chance to be something. But
not in his case. Not when you've been stinking it up for 7 years. This was a bad move, but it's not a move that's going to cost us the World Series, obviously. He's only going to be up here for another week, and hopefully we don't have to use him much.
Yes. Well, the day after, do you have any finishing comments on it, or are you done?
Well, I was just going to roll into our pitching staff from here.
Yeah, well, before that, I kind of want to just bring this up. The day after Thursday, they had to rain out with the Angels. The weather's been horrible here all week, by the way. It's been raining, it seems like, every single day. So the Thursday's game, I think it was called at like 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It was called about maybe 5-6 hours before game time. That's how bad the weather was. And this didn't really come as a surprise. It come as a surprise to me, but it kind of bothered me nonetheless. They were saying that because it's a rainout, you cannot get a refund on your tickets or get anything on your tickets unless that game is made up. And in this case, I don't believe the Angels are coming back to Chicago anytime soon. I think this would be a situation where if the game meant something late in the season, they would play it. But it looks like, you know, it may be a 161-game season. But you cannot go. You can't go to a different game. You can't even go and get a discount for another game. And that kind of bothered me.
That's pretty crappy.
For the simple fact is this. You're a major league team. You're charging fans $30, $35 a ticket. So they're going to be paying $35 a ticket. And I know when I was actually coming home from work at that time at about, I'd say, maybe 5 o'clock, and I had two families. I had a guy with looked like his son and maybe a couple kids. I think it was a guy with his two kids in a car asking me, was the game canceled today? Where were they playing? How come the gates aren't open? I'm like, no, the game was canceled today. So this guy, okay, he wasn't driving in a particularly nice car. So he was driving a kind of a beat-up car. He had his two kids in the car trying to take him to a baseball game. He was probably spending $90 on tickets. And then they're going to tell him, no, you can't come back unless the Sox play the Angels as a makeup day. I think that's pretty crappy. I think they should have it where you could go to another game at half price or something. Do it at least that. At least give them that.
You should even go one better. If the game is rained out, you should be able to get a voucher.
Yes.
And the voucher allows you to go to another game.
Yes. And if the tickets are open, the tickets are open.
Yeah. and just make sure it's not, you know, obviously not a premier game or, you know, not a game when they're playing the Cubs or the Yankees.
If it's an Orioles game on a Tuesday or a Royals game on a Wednesday, games like that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, for them to do that, I really thought that was pretty crappy on the Sox's part. And maybe this is common. I don't know if maybe do the Angels do stuff like this? You know?
We don't get rainouts. I think we've had one in 16 years.
Okay, so that problem really hasn't come up. But that just really just
no.
It kind of disappointed me. You really hope that with the amount of money, even if you were charging $10 for tickets and that was the case, I would be like, okay, fine. But when you're talking about $35, $40 for tickets, I mean, that bothered me a little bit. But you know what? Games had to go on. They had the rainout. They came back. They had to go to Minnesota where there was going to be no rainouts because they're in the dome. Their pitching staff continued to struggle. It started with John Garland on Friday. He got knocked around again.
Yeah.
Again.
And before talking about Garland, I just want to reiterate, key this in here, on how bad our starting pitching has been, or our pitching in general has been, our last four games. We've given up 12, 10, 8, and 7 runs the last four games. Not exactly the way you win ball games, and you can see why we were 2-3 on the week, and we were lucky to get that win Sunday with Mark Burley on the mound, which we'll discuss in a couple moments.
Yes, very interesting game. But with
John Garland, he's having problems. He's all over the place. He's leaving pitches in the zone, and he recently even said he's losing some confidence, and he's really having trouble executing pitches, and I think right now it's to the point where it's in his head. He's thinking he's going to be making mistakes, and you can't go out there thinking you're not going to do things well, especially at a professional level,
yeah.
Because when you think that, you think you have to be pinpoint with everything, and when you try to be pinpoint with everything, you're not pitching. And what pitchers do, like Burley, he goes out and pitches. He knows he's going to throw strikes, he knows he can repeat his delivery, and he pitches. John Garland, when he's good, is doing the exact same thing. And Don Cooper's task right now is going to be working with John and getting him back in a groove. And just starting it off with John's next start, let's just get him six innings where he gives up three or four runs only. Because that's a step in the right direction, assuming he's making, at least for the most part, better pitches. And I'd like to see John starting to go back and busting guys inside. He's not using his fastball as much as I'd like, and he's hanging a lot of his pitches. He's had a good changeup on the year, but it's hitting way too much of the plate, and that's basically been a common.
Guys inside is the key. He seems so passive to go inside, and when he's going inside, he's not going in there enough. I mean, if you're going to go inside, who cares if you hit somebody? If you got to hit somebody, hit somebody. But it seems like if he's trying to go inside, it's like he's afraid, you know, to go in too much. And I think that's his problem. And, you know, not to bring up, you know, old stuff or anything else. And I think Garland will be fine. I think as long, you know, I think he'll figure it out. I think Cooper will figure it out with him. I think Eno will figure it out. But, you know, it kind of goes back to the beginning of the season, before the season, when you give him that big contract. I was hesitant with giving him and Contreras that big contract. And now you have one of these guys struggling big time, and that is Garland. And I hope he could figure it out. I really do hope he could figure it out. But if he keeps on staying passive like he does, and he's not going to be throwing inside, he's going to be a very bad pitcher this year.
Yeah. Although I should say I still have my confidence in John. And I do think he's going to make the strides to get through this. But there's definitely reason to be concerned. It is more than just a slump right now. He's flat out bad right now.
I mean, you know, he's been, you know, he's had a couple of games where he's been bad, and then the other starts he's been very, very decent. But
yeah.
You don't want him to be very, very decent. He was better than decent prior to last year. He was a pretty good pitcher. Last year he was a really good pitcher. He's now a very, very decent pitcher right now, and at times he's just been horrible. Hopefully he can figure it out. The day after, Javier Vasquez, who's been, I think
He's been our second best pitcher,
yes.
Bar none.
Yes.
And the first four innings of that game, I sat there. Basically, it's like when Johan Santana faces the Sox, I sit there and I go, okay, I'm just going to sit down and watch the Sox get whooped. Because I know it's going to happen. I knew regardless of what Garland did, we were going to lose on Friday. We already beat Santana once this year, and that's a miracle in itself.
Yeah, and you know what? You just saw Santana from the first inning. You just knew, especially after Ozuna got thrown out at third on that. He was trying to get a triple in the first at bat. You just knew it. You know, Santana just locked it down, and that was it. Like that was a chance the Sox were going to have to kind of start things, and it didn't happen, and that was it. He was going to shut the door and forget about the rest of the game.
Exactly. And then Saturday, I felt the same way with Vasquez. We were hitting Radke all over the place, and technically we could have killed Radke and got him out of the game early, but he was able to stay in there and give him some innings for the Twins. But Vasquez, first four innings, he was pretty much unhittable. He gave up like two, three hits, and which Cruz, he had the thing on cruise control. Sox had a 4-run lead, and things were looking like we were just going to keep piling on the runs, and we were going to pretty much beat him 10-1, 10-2. And Vasquez was going to be his dominant self, winning, I think, would have been his fifth in a row.
Fifth inning
Instead,
came.
Vasquez came out for the fifth inning, and we lost the lead. There were some questionable calls, and Vasquez, I think, how do I say it best? I think he let the calls get to him, he let the hits get to him, and he lost a little bit of his focus, and he got concerned, and he got frustrated and razzed, and the hits kept coming after that. And we lost a game that I think we would have won 95% of the time.
Yeah, and he pitched bad. Going back to the bad calls, I know I was going to save that for later on, but figure might as well do it now since we're talking about it. If you watch the game, Hawk Harrelson and DJ, they were just
They
infuriated
were
with these
livid.
calls. And you know me, I don't care for stuff like that. I think bad calls, I think they even themselves out throughout the whole season. I think if you really look at the Sox, when was the last time they had a game outside of Saturday where they just didn't they had a lot of calls go against them?
I didn't hear what you said outside of Oakland.
No, I said outside of Saturday. When was the last time
Oh,
the Sox
Saturday.
had one of those games where the umpires just made bad call after bad call going against them?
We've had some games. I thought Sunday night's game with Burley pitching. I didn't see the first inning where he got shelled, so I can't really speak of that. But I thought the ump's strike zone was a little odd. I thought both pitchers were getting squeezed a bit, to
But
be
no,
honest
but that's
with
what I'm
you.
saying. I'm thinking if you go back to last year, there weren't many times where the Sox, there's going to be bad calls made. I think that's understandable. Umpires are going to make mistakes. And when these mistakes are made, one team's going to get screwed out of it. And I think if you go back to last year, the Sox weren't screwed more than their opponents. So I don't like when a team, especially when this stuff all evens out. I believe all this stuff evens out in the end. I think if the Sox get screwed now, they're going to get calls benefiting them later on. I don't understand where you have a Hawk and you have a DJ getting so upset when they've seen the other thing happen. They've seen it the other way around. They've seen other teams get bad calls against them, and the Sox take advantage. That's what happened. There was a bad call made. It went against the Sox, and the Minnesota Twins took advantage because Javier Vasquez pitched like absolute crap after those calls.
I think you can make the. I mean, obviously, I've long been the same proponent. Bad calls happen. You
Deal
either
with
step
it.
up and overcome them, or you lose. Like in the playoffs last year, everyone talked about all the bad calls that the Sox were being the benefit of. But people forget we also took care of business in the,
Yes.
with those
Yes.
calls. And at the same time, the Houston Astros got calls. They got a gift home run in the World Series that wasn't talked about. But you know why it wasn't talked about? Because the White Sox overcame that bad call and still won the game.
And I'll even go one further. I think when it comes to stuff like that, this is my whole thing. If let's say that call would have been meaning, would have been a big call, and it would have had an impact on the game, I would have responded simply by saying this: you guys let them hit the ball that far. Whenever you let a guy hit the ball that far, there's a chance that the call could be called a home run. So don't let him kill the ball off you. I think just stuff like that. If you don't want a bad call to happen, try to put yourself in a situation where those calls aren't going to affect you.
However, I do want to get back to this call, and I do think it was a pretty terrible call. It's about as bad as it gets because it has to be evident that he wasn't paying attention on the swing. Because I don't know how you could possibly call that a ball and say he didn't go around because it was a full-on swing.
Yeah, I
And
agree.
I think it was Terry Scott or something's his name. And then yesterday, Ron Gardenhire gets rung out because he got hosed in the ninth inning. I think Jenks is pitching.
Redmond, it was a close call. I mean, I think if the umpire says he didn't swing or did swing, I don't think you could. It's tough to really call, especially when it happens that quickly. But their problem was they didn't go to the first base umpire.
I'm not talking about the call. I'm talking about the way that he didn't ask for help. This is two straight nights
yes.
where he evidently didn't see it. I realize he's the first guy you go to, is the first base ump in Saturday's game with Vasquez, and you look there. However, when he doesn't see it, and it's evident he didn't see it because there's no way if you were watching that you would have called that a ball. It was not questionable. It was a full-on swing. Then he should have said, hey, I didn't see it. Go back to the home plate ump, who was obviously right there watching it, and even turn to third base at that point and say, hey, did you see him come way across? Because even the third base ump could have made that call at that point. And, if you don't see it, ask for help. That's all I'm saying.
But even if you do, I think whenever you're in that situation, especially in the ninth inning, be sure. Just it doesn't hurt to go out there and I think that's really sometimes the catcher's responsibility to be, you know, quick with that too. But I mean, you know, if the home plate umpire makes a call, the catcher's not going to argue with it.
Well, yeah, when the home plate umpire makes the call, the catcher's definitely not arguing, unless the home plate umpire calls it a ball, in which case he goes, you know, to first base and petitions.
Yeah.
But now let's talk about an historical game and one we were lucky to win. That's Sunday Night Baseball. There were a lot of interesting things that happened in this game. You had a triple play.
Weird game.
You had 7 runs given up in the first inning by Mark Burley. Sox came back
to
win.
You had two good defensive teams look horrible on two separate innings.
Yeah.
It was a weird game. You know, let's start with the first inning, though. Mark Burley, kind of weird how he gave up 7 runs. Only 2 of them were earned when really a lot of them were his fault because, first of all, he was getting his ass handed to him. And second of all, he made one of those errors, which I don't really understand. I mean, I know errors are errors, and, you know, if an error is made, you have to give it an earned run. But in a case like that, Burley made that error. So 2 earned runs over 7, that doesn't make too much sense because he's at fault for, I would say, 5 of those runs. But nonetheless, just a horrible defensive inning. Burley, who doesn't make many mistakes, made a mistake. Uribe, who doesn't make many mistakes, made a mistake. And I mean, after scoring 3 runs, they were down 7-3 after the first inning. It seemed like, that might have been it. I mean, in terms of just momentum.
That's what y'all thought, but then I got home, I turned on the TV, and the Sox started coming back. Our offense looked fantastic. Once again, we hammered Carlos Silva out of the game. Juan Uribe had a tremendous game.
And that wasn't the surprise. I think the surprise was Burley came out, and I mean, Burley has had bad innings and he's come back and shut teams down. But you watch that first inning, and I believe there was maybe 4 or 5 hits in a row where the balls were hit on the first pitch. It seemed like pitch was thrown, ball was hit. Pitch was thrown, ball was hit. Back to back to back to back pitches. So, I mean, when you see Burley getting hit that hard, because I haven't seen him hit that hard in a long time, you just think, okay, he's gonna get hit like this all game long. But he made some huge strides, and they didn't score a run for the rest of the game.
Yeah, Burley really stepped up. He kept the team in the game. But more importantly, there was a lot of talk after the game that Burley was tipping his pitches in the first inning, they thought. And in the later innings, he corrected that problem, and it was evident. He still had gotten some jams later in the game. His command was not there, and he got out of it one time where there was a triple play where there was a bunt with runners on first and second. The runners were going.
Yeah.
Canerco was able to come in, catch the ball on the fly, throw to second base, and then they he either threw to second or to first.
Yeah. And when it comes to fatigue like that, I mean, even though he didn't have many pitches yesterday, when you go through a first inning like he did, you're going to be putting a lot more into your pitches in that first inning to where later in the game you're going to be worn out. So that's understandable for him to get kind of, tired down later in the game. But in that first inning, that may have been the case as far as him tipping his pitches because it seems like every single pitch he was throwing, when it was outside, they were going to right field. When it was inside, they were pulling the ball. And they weren't waiting second, third pitches. It was the first pitch swinging, hitting the ball hard.
And it was an historic game. You don't see Burley get hit hard like that. The White Sox had given up something like 4 unearned runs all season, and we gave up – it was actually 6 unearned runs he gave up because they apparently changed it to him only giving up 1 earned run in the game.
Wow.
So 6 unearned runs, and we'd only given up 4 all season. And the Minnesota Twins had given up something like 6 all season, and I think they gave up 3 in the game. So you had about two of the 3 best defensive teams in baseball just handing runs to each other.
Yes.
However, the White Sox hit the ball hard all game long.
Oh, they did. They did from
And
the
we
first inning
really,
on.
yeah. We were the better team despite being in a hole early on. And Burley was the first pitcher to give up 7 runs or more in the first inning and get the win in over 106 years. Pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. I don't know how the hell they keep stats like that, but it's pretty impressive.
Not a, well, I think it's impressive that they keep a stat like that. The stat itself is weird, but the fact that they were able to find it, I think, is the pretty impressive part. Because is that a good stat to have? Is that a good thing if you're Burley?
Well, you got the win, and that's what it comes down
I
to.
guess so. I guess wins are always good.
Exactly. So we had a bit of a negative first segment, and it's different, and this bad week gave us a lot more to talk about, which may not be a good thing because you guys have to hear more of us. But we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back for more. Welcome back to Sox Talk on the Air, the official podcast of SoxTalk.com. The second half, we will talk a bit about Bobby Jenks, Brian Anderson, Scott Pesetnik, and then the upcoming series. But before we get into that, I want to tell you about the best Chicago sports websites on the web. SoxTalk.com, TalkBears.com, TalkBulls.com, and TalkBeehawks.com.
It sounds like you're reading from something with that.
I'm not, though. It's part
no,
of
I
the
know,
Talk
no.
Chicago Sports Network.
No, I know. It just sounded like you were doing like one of those promos.
I know. I was trying. I hear your guys' 360 the Pitch stuff. And speaking of 360 the Pitch, you can hear more of Mario on his very funny and very entertaining and semi-informative.
Semi. Very semi.
Hey, I think you guys would be the first to admit you guys don't – you're not very informative.
Is there less than semi?
But –
can you get some other than semi?
Possibly.
Okay.
Possibly. But it's From Chicago is their other show with Mario and Jeff. And then 360thepitch.com has a lot of other very good interactive sports podcasting shows.
Yes. Now, you said we were a little bit negative in the first segment. We're going to get a little positive in the first segment, although your positive was Bobby Jenks, and I don't really care for it too much. But apparently you think Bobby Jenks, everything's good to go.
Yes, I do. I've been saying for how long, every single show, that Bobby Jenks has been overworked by Ozzie Guillen. And I'm not talking about him needing a break every week. I'm talking about the fact that when he's throwing consistently 3 to 4 games, getting one day off, back 3 to 4 games, one day off, back 3 to 4 games, one day off, and doing that for a month's time, you got to remember, this guy has been a reliever for one season now. This is his second season of his reliever. He came to his training camp out of shape. He's been pitching into shape, and his velocity was down. He did the same thing last year. He was overused, he got rest, and he came back in the postseason throwing gas. And what did he do? He had some rest, he came back last night throwing gas. He looked about as good as he has all year long.
My thing with him is it seems like it doesn't take much to get him overused.
No. He's been one of the most used relievers in all of baseball. How does it not take that much to get him overused? He's been pitching a whole lot, and his ERA has really been inflated these last few appearances because he was gassed. And I think a lot of relievers would have been gassed at that point, especially when you're throwing as hard as he is, and he makes a lot of those two-inning saves, just like he did last night. This was, and I think part of the reason Ozzie's worked him as much as he has is he's trying to work him into shape and get him built up so he can be a real durable reliever. I don't know if he'll ever be a real durable reliever, but we shall see. But it's more important to have Bobby Jenks healthy for us all season long. And if we have him, you know, every 3 weeks and he's pitching 3 weeks, let's just say we play 18 games. I think we probably play more like 19 or 20. But let's say we play 18 games in 3 weeks and he pitches in 13 of those 18 games or 10 or 12 of those 18 games, then you give him some rest afterwards.
Well, yesterday he...
You let Kotz get a save, or you get Pulida save, and what you do is you take it when we have an off day, and then you give him another off day or two, essentially. You maybe put him in between them.
In last night's game, he was throwing about 98, 99, so he was back to September, October self. I'm going to be interested to see how he does today. You know, today, by the time you listen to this show, it's the game's probably already over, the 12 o'clock game against the Twins. But I'm going to be curious to see if he gets in today. Hopefully he does get in with the lead, and then, you know, later on, you know, Sox pull out with the win. But I want to see how hard he's throwing today, because that's really – if he's going to have 3-4 days of rest and he's going to pitch one day, I want to see how his arm is a day after. Because if he's throwing 96 today and then he's throwing 94 on Monday or Tuesday, I think it's way too early in the season to be dropping the velocity that quickly. But, I mean, we'll see. You know, we'll see. It's just wait and see, I guess. I think for the most part I agree with you. It seems like he has been getting worked a little bit too much, but I still think it's a little too early in the season to be worn out after, you know.
He's going to get the save today, and he's going to be throwing gas. So that's going to be answered in a couple hours.
Okay, well.
And you shall see that.
Enough with the pitching. Two guys on offense. One guy who's coming around. The other guy who's a key. But the first guy, Brian Anderson, he's starting to come around.
Yeah,
I mean,
last 10 games, he's hitting .350. With 2 home runs, 4 RBIs, 2 walks, 3 strikeouts, and 6 runs scored. And 2 of those strikeouts were against Johan Santana. So 2 of those 3 Ks were against Johan.
And really, if you remember that game against Santana, Santana was pretty much dominating everybody. And I think Anderson's first 2 at-bats, he went full count both times. I believe he walked the first time, and then I think he went full count again the second time. So when you're going up against a Santana, especially a guy like Santana, he's going to go straight after you. He's not going to nibble, especially with a ninth hitter who's batting 170. The fact that he was able to go and work some deep counts against a Santana who was on his game and who was completely dominating every other Sox hitter, I think that says something.
Oh, yeah. There's no – you can't feel sorry for a guy. You can't say a guy's terrible when he strikes out twice to Johan Santana, because a lot of guys strike out twice to Johan Santana.
Sometimes more.
But it's really good to see Brian Anderson coming around. And – as I hammered upon about 2 weeks ago, Anderson was at the plate without a plan. He was trying to protect everything, and now he's starting to actually aggressively go after pitches that he seems to want,
so it's
and
the
results have been good.
So it's the approach.
Yeah, the talent is there, and we saw him even last night. Did you see that ball he made? It was a shot deep center field. He goes back, gets
it,
and then fires the ball in a second,
that
and the
play,
Twins guy can't get in the third.
That play was so much harder than it looked.
Oh, when the ball, especially when it's right at you like that.
And he plays shallow. He doesn't play deep. He plays a pretty shallow center field. I mean, he's right where, you know, Torii Hunter plays, and Torii Hunter is one of the best out there. So the fact that he had to go all the way back there, he made that play look a lot easier than it was.
That was awesome defense. Right now, and I'm being generous to other defensive center fielders, Brian Anderson is one of the 6 best center fielders in baseball. I think Torii Hunter, Andrew Jones, and our own former Aaron Rowan are the 3 guys that are ahead of him. But I've seen Anderson get the balls that Rowan wouldn't get, too. Andrew Jones is amazing. I don't think anyone's better than Andrew Jones, and Torii Hunter's right there. Brian Anderson could sneak into that level, but aside from those 3 guys, and no, Jim Edmonds is not a great defensive center fielder anymore, so people can forget about that. Aside from that, I don't see anyone that is better than Brian Anderson right now defensively. And that is a surprise to me, because I thought it would take him a year or two to get up to this level.
Yeah.
So he is really impressive. I'm glad Ozzy is sticking with him. And I hope we continue to stick with him all season long, unless he's hitting like 100 in July.
Yeah.
In which case, I understand a move or change has to be made.
I think I said this last week. If Brian Anderson, I think they had to give him the rest of this month. And if he was still batting 150, 160 batting in the month, then I think it's time for the Sox to say, okay, who are we going to trade for come July? Who are we going to trade for come July? And, you know, and then until then, what minor league are we going to bring up to kind of just fill the void for now? But it is the approach with him. And I think I really, when I look at Brian Anderson, just in terms of approach, I really look at him, comparing him to Creedy. Because when you remember how Creedy came up, he was a guy you seemed like he was completely in between. He would go up there, he would swing at a pitch in the dirt, take a pitch right down the middle, he was down 0-2. That's what it seemed like Brian Anderson was doing, you know, early this season in the first month, you know, is that he was taking pitches down the middle, swinging at junk, and he was always down in the count. I think if he goes out there with a better approach, looks for certain pitches, is more aggressive in certain cases, and we've said it before, if he bats .240 and plays the defense that he is, and he bats ninth, he's producing for the team.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt about it. And I say it is so important the defense he makes, because our only other option right now is Rob Mikowiak, and he can't hit any better than Anderson, and defensively he's not even close. And if for some reason Anderson really struggled or got hurt, right now the guy we'd see called up is going to be our a top prospect, Ryan Sweeney, who just got placed on the disabled list in Charlotte with a strained hamstring, and he's been getting time in center field, which I predicted early in, during our spring training show, when I said we need to give him more at bats, or not more at bats, but more play in the center field.
Yeah. I mean, because
And
they're
so
depleted there. They, like you said, Brian Anderson is the only guy at on the roster who could be. What's that? Who are you laughing
I'm just
for?
laughing. You were talking to like dip, 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 dip,
D-d-d-d-d-d. I do that all the time. You should be used to it by now. I just put it on technical problems.
Oh, yeah.
But the outfield is so depleted, and Brian Anderson is the only guy on the roster who's going to be playing an above-average defense in center field. You know, Mikowiak is decent. You know, he's doable. I mean, if he's swinging a hot bat and you're short on offense, then he's fine in center field. But outside of that, you know, if you're just looking at defense alone, he's not an above-average defensive center fielder. And Anderson's the only guy we have. So having Sweeney play a little center field in the minor leagues makes sense.
Definitely, and we're going to take this from one outfielder to another outfielder, and then a quick little mention about another outfielder.
Scotty
But Scott
Pasenik.
Pasetnik, he is continuing to hammer the ball after I predicted that he was back, and predicted correctly, I may add.
Well, didn't I kind of predict that too?
But
Well,
you predicted that you said he'd be all right. I was more bold, but at the same time, I was bold. Oh! I have to give a breaking news update. The San Diego Padres have overtook the Colorado Rockies and are a game ahead of the Rockies in first place. That means I'm not going to be wearing no rainbow, whatever I was supposed to
as
be
of now,
wearing.
the Padres are playing over their head right now. As soon as the Rockies just go head to head with them, that'd be all right.
That's right. The Padres, not the Rockies, are playing over their head. You heard it from Mario first.
But
But
Scott Pitsenik, he's now batting .286. This is a
yeah.
guy who was batting 79 at one point. He's now up to
Since April 13th.
26.
On April 13th, he was batting .059 with an OBP of 135 and a slugging percentage of .00088.
What? How many O's was that?
After that, .354 average, .437 on base
Wow.
percentage, .511 slugging percentage,
Wow.
23 runs scored, 8 RBIs, 11 walks, 10 stolen bases. More importantly, listen to this. The White Sox are 24-7 when Scott Pasetnik plays. I'm talking at least one at bat. 0-5 when he doesn't play, 14-3 when he scores a run, and 6-0 when he steals a
But
base.
you know what's weird about that is that when Scott Pitsenik isn't playing, who is?
Pablo Azuña.
And Pablo Ozuna is batting well over .500. That's
Yeah.
weird. Like, you would think that if you would take a Pitsenik who's hitting well out of the lineup and you would put him in with Ozuna who's hitting very well, you wouldn't think that would be that much of a difference in
Yeah.
the record.
In the five losses when Pasenet doesn't play, Ozuna is 10 of 19 at the plate, and he's only scored twice during that time. So it's
Maybe
interesting to say, and
it's
I'd like to
just
thank RMB Jim Jicho for those stats. They were pretty good stats there.
Wow, I wonder, maybe Iguchi and Tomy, they just feel more comfortable with Pitsenik on base.
I don't know. I
No,
mean, I like
that is kind
Ozuna.
of strange because
Yeah.
Ozuna's been doing a hell of a job offensively. A hell of a
Yeah.
job offensively.
And of course, Ozuna, he's won us some games, so same time. But it definitely shows the importance of Scott Pasenik, a healthy Scott Pasenik. And he stole a base last night, I thought it was. Yeah, he stole a base last night.
Yeah.
So he's making progress. He's been a little bit more accurate. He hasn't been running all that much, even though he's been getting on. Because I don't know if he's stolen a base since he had that four base swipe
Pitsenik?
performance against Victor
You
Martinez.
talking about Pitsenik?
Yeah,
No,
and then he stole yesterday.
he swiped a base yesterday. I mean, I'm
Yeah.
still not. He doesn't
But
seem like he's.
between that stolen base and the four against Victor Martinez, I don't know if there was anything in between that.
Well, no, he's had I think he stole no, he stole a
He's
base in the Angels series. He did swipe a base in the Angels series,
okay.
but before then it was just four stolen bases against Cleveland. He hasn't been thrown out, though, which is good. So he hasn't really been trying to steal any bases. But still, when you watch him, he still doesn't seem like he's there. It seems like he's like a little bit hesitant. It seems like on pickoff attempts, it just doesn't seem like he's completely confident that he's going to get back. Because I remember he said it last year. I don't know if you remember, but late in the year, maybe July, I would say, they were talking to him about stealing bases, and he goes, I know if I got the base as soon as I take off. And if I know I have the base, I go feet first because I know I got it. This year, you see him going a lot of head-first slides, which means he's not sure. And he's been thrown out with feet-first slides a couple times this year. And that says, if he was saying last year that he knew as soon as he takes off whether he has the base or not, and if he felt he had the base, he was going to go in feet-first and he was going to be safe. If he's doing it this year and getting thrown out, that shows that he doesn't feel completely comfortable stealing bases right now.
I think what could be more scary is he's that off on his timing. Maybe he's lost a step. Maybe something's going on, because when he thinks he's got that good jump and he's still getting thrown out and he thinks he can slide feet first, it tells you that maybe he needs to reevaluate his wheels. But hopefully it's just all just a slump. And part of it is I think teams know exactly what's happening, and it's hard to steal that much. When
I'm sure.
We're really the focal point of that offense. Bad teams, they can steal – And players on bad teams can steal a lot of bases a lot of times because
there's no focus towards them.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a big deal if he steals second. You're more important. We're more worried with focusing on the hitters because they really aren't that good of a team. Of course, Scott Pesetnik is no Sean Figgins on the base paths, because Figgins is a better base runner than Pesetnik.
Yeah.
And Pesetnik's been caught, you know, he's got 10 stolen bases and he's been caught 5 times.
Now, I know you want to talk about Jermaine Dye a little bit. He's finally back from the injury, and it seems like there's been no setback with him offensively at all. He's swinging the bat just as well as prior to the injury.
Yeah, he's hitting .293 with a .393 on base percentage, and in limited at-bats, 92 compared to, you know, Canerica's got 134, Tome's got 121. He's got 8 home runs and 25 RBIs. He is fourth on the team in RBIs, and he's been playing fantastic.
I'm sure a lot of the talk and a lot of the attention has gone to Tomy and it's gone to Canerico, and I'm sure when teams are facing the Sox, they're worried about Tomy, they're worried about Canerico, but it's Jermaine Dye batting fifth, who's just he's quietly putting up numbers.
He's quietly being one of the best right fielders in all of baseball.
Because behind him, you have a guy like Przinski, who's always getting into trouble and is always causing, you know, problems for people. Then you have Joe Creedy, who's probably one of the more clutch players in the game. A guy like Jermaine Dye, he's just kind of hidden in there, and he's getting the job done.
Oh, yeah, he's looking fantastic. And the thing about Jermaine Dye, when he's on, he hits the ball harder than anyone on the Sox. That includes Jim Thome, who hits some monster home runs. But when Dye's on,
line drive missiles.
Yeah. And they're just like, boom, out of the park.
Yeah, especially some shots to right field, they just jump right off his bat, and they don't get, you know, very high off the ground.
Yeah, and I mean, Jermaine Dye is probably one of my favorite players in the game because he great attitude. He's a big part of this team and why we won last year. He's very underrated defensively in right field. He doesn't have the range he once had due to all his leg problems.
But he's going to make the plays. He's going to make the plays he needs to make. He's got a good strong arm.
Yeah.
He's been underrated almost.
Base pass, yeah.
Before we go, you know, we're going to cut the show off in a little bit. But we got the upcoming series. Not so much worried about the Devil Rays. You know, although the Devil Rays are always going to put up a little fight. You have the Cubs coming in this weekend. They've been playing bad. They've been playing pretty bad. But at the same time...
Yeah, they've lost 4 in a row.
And I think 8 prior to that.
9 of their last 10.
Yeah,
9 of their last 10.
But nonetheless, whenever you have a series like this, it's still up for grabs. Have
you
always
throw the record out.
Yes, have you... I mean, I know going back, you know, 3-4 years ago, it seems like it doesn't matter which team has the better team, which team is playing better. When you have a series like this, it's all up for grabs. Because I always go back to this... When a Mike Caruso hits a home run, you know, to help the Sox win a game in a year where they really weren't playing as good as the Cubs at that time, that just shows anything could happen in these series. Anything.
Yeah, that was, I think, 98 when the Cubs, when Sosa was having his historic season, and the Sox were in total rebuilding mode.
And the Sox, I think, what took 2 out of 3 in Wrigley. That could very well happen. When you look at the Cubs right now, this is what the Cubs need. they need a series like this where they're going to have, you know, the fans coming in and they're going to be, you know, screaming. It's going to be a playoff atmosphere. And I don't know if you realize, well, actually you haven't realized because you're not here, but Cubs fans are getting pissed off with this team. They're starting to actually dislike this team big time. A series like this for the Cubs, taking 2 out of 3 from the Sox, would be much bigger to them than it would be bad to the Sox if they were to lose 2 out of 3.
I think that's right. That's the first time. And I realize a lot of White Sox fans still hate the Cubs, and
yes,
they still have their big things.
But the Sox could
it.
Lose 2 out of 3, and it wouldn't be a big deal as far as momentum goes.
Yeah, because we are defending World Series champions. We have bigger fish to fry. The Chicago Cubs are not going to go to the World Series. They're not going to make the playoffs this year. Unless Kerry Wood and Mark Pryor come back all of a sudden and both stay healthy the rest of the year, they are not going to go anywhere. And we know that's not going to happen. Wood and Pryor staying healthy all season. Even then, I don't know if they do anything, to be honest with you.
They would have a lot of things would have to go right. But I'm saying this weekend, if they could pull off 2-3 wins against the Sox, it would be bigger momentum for them than the Sox winning 2 out of 3. Unless the Sox get swept,
big for their fans.
Unless the Sox get swept by the Dove Rays, because Sox fans they kind of get antsy and get really jumpy really quick. I mean, if they get swept by the Dove Rays and they go against the Cubs and they lose 2 out of 3, then you're gonna have people saying, "What's going on with the Sox?"
Well, especially because it'll carry on from this week, which we struggled in.
Yes.
So we got to take advantage of this because we're playing. You got to look at it this way. The Cubs are not a very good team right now, and the Tampa Bay Devil Rays are not a very good team right now, and we got to take care of business against 2 not-so-good teams.
Yeah. And then, you know, they play the A's following that, and the A's are a tough little team. The Blue Jays are not going to lay down. The Indians are, you know, even though they've been playing bad, I mean,
they play good against us.
And when you look, you have the Indians. You have the Rangers after that. The Rangers are a very good offensive team that they could kill you any day. You have the Tigers then the Indians again, then the Rangers again, then the Reds. And if the Reds are still playing the way they are, then you have the Cardinals, you have the Astros. You have, after this Devil Rays and Cubs series, a whole bunch of series where you're either playing good teams or teams that might give you enough trouble.
Exactly. So we got to take advantage of this while we have the time, while we have the opportunity, because our schedule is going to get real rough in June and really the end of May. So if the club cannot carry out and get some momentum built up, we could see ourselves going into a bit of a slump. We need to see the pitching staff pick up and start pitching like it did last year. And I'm not saying they have to be as great as they were last year, but I'm just talking we needed to get more consistency out of them.
Yes.
Because right now it's been a lot of different things. And it's nice to say our pitching staff has not been that great in my mind, even though we are going deeper than any other team with our starting pitching.
But that's the thing. They're still going deeper than any other team, which is the strength in itself.
Yeah. So our pitching hasn't been – it's been mediocre, and we're still 24-12 with the best record in baseball. That says a lot about this team, that even when we're not clicking on all cylinders, we're able to win games. And that's why White Sox fans got to be excited about chances of a
and
repeat,
I think
even though it's just May.
The one concern you could have from a pitching standpoint is when you look, and when you look at this American League and you look at how a lot of these teams have started out, outside of facing the Indians and the Tigers, you look at the teams the Sox have faced, the Royals, the Blue Jays, when the Sox, I think, played them, I think their offense was struggling. The Twins' offense didn't struggle. The Angels' offense, you said it many a times, their offense has struggled. The Mariners' offense has struggled. They face a lot of offenses that just have just been horrendous, either this year or, you know, going back as far as last year when you look at the Mariners. So I'm going to be curious. I'm really looking forward for, you know, after this week, when they face the A's, when they face the Rangers, when they face the Tigers, and they face some of these other teams, because I want to see how their pitching staff kind of steps up and holds up to some of these better offensive teams.
Definitely. It's going to be the real first true test we've had, because we have not played that many great teams in my mind on the season so far.
No.
So it's going to be a key to step up and do it. And I'd like to – we're going to finish the show off right now. I'd like to finish it off a little bit different this week. And
you're going to sing?
Tell you real quickly about 3 minor league prospects that have been playing pretty well for our organization that we may see pretty soon. No singing? Can I dance? No?
No dancing. Actually, you can't dance because, like your whole little number 5 thing, right? Number two, yeah. I can't see it. See, that's why I couldn't see number 2.
So
what are these minor league guys? You're saying 3? Who are the 3?
3 of them. Sean Tracy, Lance Broadway, and Josh Fields. I'll start off with Sean Tracy. There was some thought that he was going to be called up to pitch. He was moved to the starting rotation in Charlotte, and he is, if we want a long-term plan out of our bullpen that we're going to take a chance on in-house right now, Sean Tracy would be that option. He's a starter. He struggled in his first six bullpen appearances. He was moved back to the rotation. He is 4-0 with a 2.65 ERA, and he struck out 35 guys in 37 innings, giving up 24 hits. But he has walked 24, so he gives up a lot of walks. He's got a power arm, power slider, good sinking action, and he's working on developing an off-speed pitch. So he's a guy for Sox fans to keep an eye on, and they may see him later this year if we decide to send down a Boone Logan and go with an extra righty, or if a starting pitcher gets hurt and Brandon McCarthy joins the rotation. The next guy I want to talk about is last year's number one draft pick, Lance Broadway. Fans should be excited about him, and we are starting to see the development of some of our pitching prospects between him, another former first-round sandwich pick, Tyler Lumsden, and some other strength pitching, obviously guys like Charles Hager. Broadway, he's in Double-A for the first time this year, 4-1, 1.42 ERA in 8 starts. He has a complete game shutout under his belt, and in 50.2 innings, he's walked just 10 batters, which is a pretty good command for a guy as young as he is in his first full minor league season. And he's struck out 42 while giving up 42 hits. Broadway, again, best curveball of the draft last year. And he's very advanced. He has good command. He throws a fastball, changeup, and curve. And it's going to be exciting to see him develop. And he is our best long-term pitching prospect along with Ray Liotta. And he could be ready for the major leagues as soon as next year and could be our so-called sixth starter next year if McCarthy enters the rotation. But I'm going to finish it off with Josh Fields, third baseman, who could have to move to left field. He was drafted in the first round a couple years back and was a quarterback at Oklahoma State, and this guy is figuring things out. From the second half of last season in Birmingham, he's taken off. This year in AAA, he's hitting .357 with a .432 on base percentage and a .670 slugging percentage. He's stolen 7 bases already. He's hit 8 home runs, 12 doubles, 23 RBIs. This guy flat is raking right now with 12 doubles. I already said 12 doubles. This guy is good. He is turning into one of the best hitting prospects in baseball right now. And his fielding is subpar, but in a year, you may see the Sox making room for a bat like this. This guy can rake.
I say that the Sox are going to trade all three of these guys at the trade deadline for somebody.
That's very possible. We know the way Ken Williams works. But I thought it would be a cool way to finish the show, give you guys all a little bit of insight on some minor league guys you may want to keep your eye out on or, you know, you may see sometime this year. Because I think Fields will be up in September. If none of these guys are traded, Fields and Broadway will probably get action in September.
Wow.
And Tracy would as well. So all three of these guys, if not moved, you will see at one point or another in the season.
Well, that actually may be a little bit tough considering it seems like it might be a dogfight in September. I mean, no. Who knows? Maybe the Sox pull away, but it could very well be a dogfight come September. And if that's the case, that usually means less call-ups. I mean, usually the call-ups that are made in those situations are maybe a guy who could run the bases well, a guy who could go into the bullpen and kind of eat some innings up. So guys like that, they might kind of get left off. But
Sean
who knows?
Tracy, Lance Broadway, two guys that could eat innings, just so you know.
Well, I'm talking about Fields then.
Okay, yeah, Fields, but he could be a pinch hitter that could supply power off your bat. We don't have any right-handed power off the bench. Fields could be exactly that.
So much for me making a point.
Exactly.
But that was very good on your part.
You never should make points.
Very good on your part, though. Very informative. Yeah.
And don't worry, I'm not going to ask for any of your takes on these guys. I'm smarter than that.
No, I did watch Sean Tracy. I have seen Sean Tracy. I saw a little bit of Fields. Not enough to really say much about him. I did like Tracy, though. I think he's got a little power. I think he could be a good reliever. Nothing more, but I think he could be a good reliever. But, you know, that's all I got. So I think that's time to go.
Yeah, right? And you know what? This is a rarity. For the first time ever, Mario wasn't sighing as I was finishing the show. I notice every time I listen to the shows, I hear him going, because I always try to drag it on and on. Last week I was dying, so he was happy I ended the show early. This week we had a little bit longer show. We had
what
a lot
was
more
last
substance.
Week?
Last week was when I was hacking up a lung.
Oh, yeah. Okay, because last week just didn't go very well, so I was just kind of letting it. I think the week before I was on the move that day, so I was kind of like in a rush.
Yeah.
So I was kind of like, okay, we got to go. We got to get it done and get it out. So maybe that's why. It wasn't you. It was me.
I'm glad you say that. It makes me feel so much better. It's not you. It's me. That's what I'm going to say when you get replaced by a legitimate partner on the show.
Who do you got? Who do you got?
Do I have to name names and make you feel bad?
Who do you got? Seriously, tell me which person on Sockstuck do you got?
I got better than that.
Who are you gonna bring?
Aaron Rowan wants to do the show.
Aaron Rowan.
Yes.
Aaron Rowan.
And no, it's not the Aaron Rowan that plays center field for the Phillies. It's Aaron Rowan that I just made up to make you jealous, to make it seem like other people are interested in working with me.
Go get John Rooney. You could do a show with John Rooney.
No, I'd prefer to work with Ed Farmer. He'd make me look better.
Once again, there's no video camera.
No, I'm talking about, okay, he'd make me sound better. That's what I meant to say. I just meant Ed Farmer, I think he's a bum. So, and I don't think too highly of myself, but between Ed Farmer talking about golf, I'd at least be talking about substance.
So what you're saying is that Farmer will make you look good, whereas I make you look bad. That's how we're ending on the show, is me, I am great, you are a bum. We will see you next week, Monday, once again. Of course, you could listen to us anytime, but you don't want to wait too long because then none of this stuff really is relevant. But you have to say goodbye. Say goodbye to your listeners, to your fans, and we'll be back next week.
Next week I'll be back, and I'm going to take a little line out of Woody Page, and I'm going to come up with my own Dear Diary segment for Sox Talk on the Air.